The Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium. And opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium. Good afternoon and welcome to Black Talk Radio News. My name, of course, is Scotty Reed, broadcasting from behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. Today's date is May 20th, 2016. It is a Friday, the last day of the work week for those who are accustomed to those 9-to-5s, 5 days a week, Monday through Friday. A lot of people, though, you know, they have to work through the weekend and what have you, but it is Friday. Hope that your week has been productive. Certainly mine has. We have submitted the Black Talk Media Project. When I say we, have submitted more of the programs to the TuneIn platform, which, you know, is a platform that has reach into vehicles that's coming off the assembly line as technology continues to advance in terms of automobiles and what have you, being Wi-Fi connected and actually being Wi-Fi hotspots and what have you. So just trying to increase the ways by which people can access the type of independent black media that is produced here on Black Talk Radio Network. Today is just going to be a news of the day program. Of course, we're always trying to share information 24/7. Of course, this radio station, even when we are not doing live broadcasting, is serving up pre-recorded programming, news reports and lectures and what have you. So it's always up. But of course, you know, we have social media properties that we manage. Of course, those who are contributors to the Black Talk Media Project, you see those reports coming out, you know, usually no later than the 5th over a course of several days, just sent out actually the report on our social media activities and how many people we are able to push information in front of. So you know, we are always striving to provide people with information that we think they should know about that can be useful in many different areas that you know, people are involved in. And so today will just be one of those news days. Won't be talking about any celebrities or anything like that, who broke up with who. We try to keep it more serious on this program and not, you know, be caught up in celebrity, you know, lifestyles and what have you, or gossip and all of that type of stuff. So if you have any questions or comments, any news that you would like to share, because we do encourage people, you know, to be the media that they want to see. You know, a lot of things that happen in communities across the United States of America Incorporated do not get reported by the six major media companies that own 95% or control ownership is control. So, you know, control 95% of what the world consumes in terms of media. So it's on us to get our stories out there. We can't always be looking, you know, to other people to tell our stories. It shouldn't work that way to begin with. So most definitely the way that you can get in on the program today is by giving us a call on the conference line, which is 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549032 pound. Of course, hit star 6 and 1 to signal me, and I will, of course, bring your comments on. I'm a little bit late opening up our studio line. I'm doing that now, but that number is 704-951-5030. Just briefly, some of the news topics or stories that I want to touch on. Again, you know, basically this is an open forum this Friday. But some of the stories that I want to share with you and comment on is the story of the two political prisoners. Well, now just one, but I'm talking about the Omaha two brothers who were in Nebraska, who were engaged in, you know, the revolutionary work that many activists and the Black Panther Party was involved in the 1960s and early 70s. And so you have Mondo Wielenga. He just passed away, what, a week or 2 weeks ago. He died on the prison plantation as a political prisoner, innocent of this bombing that claimed the life of a police officer. So I want to talk a little bit about that. The other political prisoner who is still alive is Edward Poindexter, and these brothers have been locked up again since the early 1970s. And they were targets of the FBI illegal COINTEL program. In other words, you know, practicing racism and white supremacy in China, prevent people from countering racism in this country, countering a whole bunch of social ills in this country. And so, you know, it's not mainstream information that you're going to get from mainstream is what I mean in terms of COINTELPRO, although there has been a few documentaries over the years or whatnot, but this is a widely known illegal operation of the FBI under the leadership of J. Edgar Hoover, and I would say subsequent FBI directors. We can still look and see that they use those tactics today, you know, in the so-called war on terror or whatnot. Well, that's what they, you know, were calling the Black Panthers and other leftist organizations back then, terrorist groups. And so we should not think that things have gotten better. No, they just gotten more refined. They gotten more slick with it. And then sometimes, you know, it's just blatant and in our face, and you know, there's just not much mass opposition to these crimes. You know, when a leading candidate for president can break laws, you know, as a Hillary Clinton, and there's never any accountability when CIA directors can oversee a torture program during the Bush administration and then be, you know, kept or appointed to another position in the Obama administration, and then from that position, along with, you know, the blessing of his boss, the chief executive officer of Barack Obama, defend torture and prevent any prosecution. So, you know, when we see things like that, then we could just say things have not changed whatsoever, because only two FBI agents ever have been held accountable, if you want to call it, their short prison sentences for their violations of law, you know, as part of their FBI duties in the counterintelligence program. So definitely want to share some information on that. Mondo Wielenga, again, it's too late to get justice or freedom for him. He's got the ultimate freedom as he has transitioned to, you know, the ancestors. But Edward Poindexter is still suffering unjustly. you know, and there's new information coming out from examiner.com, from Michael Richardson, who I have had the opportunity to speak to. He doesn't even live in the United States. So it's hard to get him on the program because of where he's located, but he has periodic access to the internet, and he publishes these articles primarily focusing on the Omaha 2, you know, for the Examiner. And so we'll, you know, discuss some stuff from that article. Let me see, what else do we want to share? Here is a story that we can elaborate on. This young black girl, 12 years old, who was going to a predominantly white private school, ended up with severe rope burns around her neck. That is a story that is being reported by BreakingBrown.com. I don't know if you all have seen this story, but you know, I'm saying, you know, this is attempted assimilation turning into an attempted strangulation. The school's trying to play it off like, you know, these are just kids having a prank. They were playing with the rope by a tree. So sounds like a lynching, an attempted lynching to me. The photographs, if you haven't seen the photographs, very deep cuts in her neck. Yes, rope. She must have really been struggling to get those cuts in her neck like that. So who knows how long they held her up in the air lynching her. And this is supposed to be a game or something. So I haven't had an opportunity to read the article, but we'll get into those details. And so, you know, we send sometimes our children off to these places thinking that they're going to get an advantage in life because of the system that we live in. And so, you know, got to go to this school over here and make these connections and these associations and whatnot. And so we send our children, when we're able, to, you know, private schools, elite schools, and things of that nature. And then they become victims of racism, victims of white supremacy, you know, that mindset, victims of terrorism and what have you. And so, you know, we have to be careful if we are going to send our children off. And I would say, regardless if it's a predominantly white school or predominantly black school, certainly we've seen people lose their lives at predominantly black schools through hazing, college fraternity hazing and what have you. I remember a story out of Florida or whatnot, but we should be teaching our children, you know, to not be so trusting of people. And I know that sounds kind of bad way to bring up your children, but you want to bring them up with a realistic view of not only the world, but a realistic view of people. And people are dangerous, and people will try to gain your trust, and they'll turn on you. You know, and I mean, I had a similar experience, certainly not with a rope around. I didn't end up with a rope around my neck. I think I was about 6 or 7 years old at the time in Detroit, lived in a mixed neighborhood. And I would say, you know, race relations on 31st Street in Detroit were good at the time. But I was like 6 or 7 years old. And I did have a little white friend and what have you. And then he got with the other older white kids who lived on the other farther end of the street. And they were all on their bikes or whatnot. And you know, I remember, and my god brother chewed me out for laying on my back on the grass and allowing these white people to try to, you know, put the tires of their bicycles on me. And, you know, I was so naive at that age, I didn't even recognize that they were trying to hurt me and what have you. But thankfully, I was under the watchful eye of my god brothers, you know. And then we definitely had neighborhood watch back then, black folks looking out for other black folks. And, you know, it just reminds me of that. But again, it was not as serious as ending up with rope burns on your neck that looked like somebody tried to slash your throat, you know, because you were apparently hung from a tree, apparently lynched. So I don't know if y'all saw that story, but again, that's just further commentary on the state of terrorism in this country, especially towards non-white people, specifically towards black people. Let me make sure that the studio line's operating correctly. Okay, yeah, let me go ahead and open this up. So, you know, these are some of the stories that I want to comment on. Definitely, if you would like to comment, what are your thoughts on this, especially, you know, when it comes to raising our children, and not to be blaming the parents or anything, because all I know is they could have say, told their children, like my mother told me when they, you know, I became a victim of school busing in Detroit, and told me, you know, not to trust these people and be suspicious of them and don't allow anyone to put their hands on you, not even a teacher. You tell them to call me and what have you. And so, you know, we can tell our children, you know, how to conduct themselves, and they can follow it to the T, and that is no guarantee that they won't become victims. So I also do not want to make assumptions about the parents of this child that I can't possibly know. All right. So anyway, moving on. The Confederate flag, the battle flag, is actually, I think, the Northern Virginia battle flag that represented that unit that was led by Robert E. Lee, General Robert E. Lee of the Confederacy. But now it's known as the Confederate flag. Of course, you know, it was used by General Lee in his campaign to keep slavery going and whatnot, and the subjugation of non-white people to white people and what have you. But now it's known as the Confederate flag. Of course, it was adopted by the terrorist organization known as the Ku Klux Klan. That still exists in one form or another, or there are similar formations that are copying their white supremacist terrorist tactics and what have you. But in terms of the federal government, Confederate flag has been banned from cemeteries. Let me see, Virginia military, I think it's graveyards, and of course we'll look up the details on that. But the United States House of Representatives voted to ban the flag in Virginia cemeteries. I think there was also similar action at other, I think it was similar at Arlington, or I've read similar stories, but some people saying, you know, this is still the momentum of the terrorist attack that occurred in South Carolina, Charleston, South Carolina, at the Emmanuel Church there, where we seen 9 victims lose their lives by being murdered by the terrorist Dylan Roof. And so, you know, some people are still pushing for the banning of this terrorist symbol and what have you, and I'm all for that. Again, you know, I've talked about this issue in the past. This is war. In war, there are flags, and you know, even when you just playing games, what is the goal? To capture the enemy's flag. And certainly if you can get a flag banned from the public sphere, then you really start to give people correct context about what this symbol stands for and the people behind it and what have you, and then people aren't confused, and even black people are confused and you know, thinking this is about some kind of heritage. Yeah, the heritage of white supremacy, the heritage of slavery. So, you know, there are different areas of warfare, just like there are different areas of people activity areas. So this is, I feel like, the intersection of politics and war. Okay, politics and war, and I support this. And so, you know, it'll probably go through, you know, because some white folks is feeling a little bit sympathetic after the blatant terrorist attack, and they don't want to be on the record of supporting white supremacy and terrorists, even though actions speak louder than words. And this by no means passing means that the House of Representatives isn't practicing racism in other ways, because they've never abolished slavery. Let's ban slavery. Let's ban private prisons and jails in this country. Yeah, that, if you really want to make some serious moves. But yeah, we, you know, again, Progress is progress. A win is a win. And thus far, you know, just making people see this flag for what it is. Because, you know, we don't hear Jews talking about, you know, I support people's right to you know, plant the Nazi flag and put it all up in my face and practice visual terrorism. And we don't hear nobody else saying that kind of stuff or nobody else being told to tolerate these sort of things. And so, you know, we have to also get out of mindset that we had to be visually terrorized and psychologically terrorized. That's a psychological warfare as well. So, you know, it's the battle is on so many levels. I mean, that's just, you know, well, let me just move on. Anyway, let's jump into another story about presidential politics. I'll give you a brief overview before we hit the first break. But there are four rallies that could turn into protests in Philadelphia that will occur at the Democratic National Convention. That will again be in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And so you got four groups that are being described as pro Bernie Sanders have received permits to demonstrate during the Democratic National Convention. The groups estimate 38,000 activists will attend. And so we've seen tens of thousands of people turn out to rallies around the country. Only Donald Trump have we seen similar activity of people, you know, turning out to hear them speak and what have you. And Hillary Clinton is being described as uninspiring, and certainly she is. If we want to talk about public speakers and public speaking and things of that nature and leadership abilities, because, you know, that's part of leadership is being able to rally the troops and what have you. And I've heard, you know, Hillary Clinton supporters say, well, all these people turning out these rallies ain't turning in the votes. Well, if they weren't turning in the votes, then the man wouldn't still be in the race and still winning, you know, caucuses and winning primary elections or tying. You know, they saying that Hillary Clinton won Kentucky. No, they got 25 delegates apiece, so that's a tie. Okay, that's a tie. So, again, media perception. So, anyway, there are four rallies that could turn into protests if we see some shenanigans like occurred at the Nevada Democratic Convention, which, you know, we pretty much are guaranteed to see. But there are a lot of calls for the DNC chairman, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, white supremacist, pro-slaver. She takes a lot of money from the private prison corporations and what have you, strong advocate for that, pushed a bill and helped pass a bill with Democratic support to legalize discrimination in auto and automobile lending and what have you. I mean, people are just so uninformed. I tell you, man, they are so uninformed. They don't know the half about these people that are in these positions, but you know, that could turn into a massive protest like was being predicted in Cleveland on the Republican side, with Donald Trump saying there'll be riots in the street if they cheat me and try to deny me this nomination and what have you. And already, you know, the Clinton camp is worried because they are losing in national polls to Donald Trump, and the convention ain't got here yet. There are many states yet to vote and caucus. And now there's a strong argument to superdelegates that she's unelectable against Trump. All we got to do is look at the numbers, look at the trends. And so it's funny that it could end up that, you know, the chaos and the riots in the streets might be at the DNC, you know, as it does appear that Republicans are the Republican establishment, I should say, are caving to the will of the masses of people who have come out to support Donald Trump's platform, even, you know, if he isn't articulating one very well. Yeah, we're not seeing that on the DNC side. They are definitely, since the beginning, tipped the scales in Hillary Clinton's favor. have tried to make people believe that the investigation into her email practices, being the first Secretary of State to set up a private email server and use that entirely. You know, for they tried to make you think like that was nothing and just telling lies and stuff like that. So anyway, that's something that came across the newswire earlier today about these permits. And one of the groups is called Black Men for Bernie. Black Men for Bernie is one of the groups that got the permit in order to protest. So those are a couple of the news stories that I'll share with you today. Again, if you have any questions, comments, anything you would like to share, you can give us a call at 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549-032-pound. Hit *6 and 1 at any time if you would like to comment on air. I see we do have a caller. We'll go to that caller on the other side of the break. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News with Scotty Reed. I'm broadcasting Mondays, Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays at 4 o'clock p.m. Eastern time, as long as the good Lord will allow me to. All right, so we'll be back on the other side. The Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium.
You are tuned in to Black Talk Radio, new black media for the new millennium.
And welcome back to Black Talk Radio News. Again, this is Scotty Reed in on this broadcast from behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. Before we go to our caller, the Black Talk Media Project just wants you to be aware that if you want to start your own independent digital radio network or manage an online radio station that is on air 24/7 with the content that you provide, check out the new yearly plans that cut the cost of a monthly plan in half for digital radio hosting, so you can find low prices and get great service and from the Black Talk Media Project. And we are able to, you know, keep the prices low because of contributions. So, you know, we do try to fund our media operations, and we want to help you build your own media operations, and we certainly have the resources to do that. And check out those very affordable plans that you can either get on a yearly basis or you can do month to month. But we are certainly here to help you start your own independent digital radio network and manage your online radio station. Go to blacktalkmediaproject.org /digital radio hosting. All right, let's go to our caller, area code 973. Welcome to Black Talk Radio News. What's on your mind?
Oh, good afternoon, Mr. Reed. I had some great, great news that I just couldn't hold to myself. I had to call you and let you know.
Well, do share. Well, do share.
Awesome news. I know you're going to be so proud. I was listening to a station called WBAI, and my favorite economist, Richard Wolff, had a segment about the 13th Amendment, talking about, oh, there was a, I want you to please write this down, and hopefully you can play that segment on abolitionist radio, because I could not believe my eyes. Something told me to tune in, and I would have caught it in podcast anyway, or they archive it, but it comes on at today, it came on at 9 o'clock to 10, but it was only for about 5 minutes, and he said it was something very peculiar about that 13th Amendment about, you know, except for punishment of crimes, which is very odd because it kept it going. But I would like for you to hear in his own terms. This guy is a renowned economist. I mean, he's traveled all over the world. And I was just elated, Mr. Reed, just elated to hear that, because I only heard it and learned about it from the Black Talk radio station. So I could not keep this news to myself. So again, WBAI, it's in archives. It came on at 9 o'clock today. You can listen to the first 10 minutes of the show, and probably, maybe, hopefully, because he always asks you to share the information to other stations. So he would love for I'm sure he would love for you to
you say that
on air if you have the time.
What are those call letters again?
W is in woman, B is in boy, A is in apple, I is as an interesting. 99.5. It's called the economic update. He does a whole thing on economics every Friday, and he goes and did. But this particular day, I was just taken back by it. Do you have that down? I'm sorry if I'm wrong.
Now you say I'm on the page. It's economic update. This came on at 9 a.m. today.
Right. Okay. Today. And it was the start of the show. It was the start of the show. You open it up, and it starts playing about the 13th Amendment. And let me tell you, I was just shocked. I mean, just totally shocked. I was not looking for him to, because he went into the situation. How he opened
it
was about there were some prisoners who were boycotting, where they had a riot in the prison in Alabama. Was that so just recently?
Now, I'm not sure. We did cover some news. I don't remember reporting the guys reporting a riot in Alabama, but they are organizing a statewide work stoppage. But it's also ongoing in Texas as well. A number of Texas prisons are also boycotting.
Well, he talks about a prison that is going through something, and then he comes in with the 13th Amendment. That's how he opens it up and ties it to prison slavery. And, I was listening to it, but I didn't caught the opening, but I caught like maybe 3 minutes into it when he started talking about Alabama or something like that. I'm not sure, but I'm going to definitely replay it, because I just thought it was such great news, because I know on the abolitionist radio, you guys like to hear that the message is getting out to its people, you know? So, you know, and I mean, it went out, that call went out to a lot of people,
Well, I have it up if you want. Let's go ahead and see if we can find it. I have it up now. You say it's about 3 minutes in?
No, it starts open. I didn't listen to it until 3 minutes into the show.
Okay. Let's go ahead and give a brief listen. Let's give a brief listen and see what they're talking about. Again, this is actually a public radio station. You know, WBAI.org is their website. So let's go ahead and tune in and see what they were talking about. And again, let me just give out the correct information and citation, which you already did, but let me give it out again. And this was on the segment called Economic Update, which is hosted by Richard D. Wolf, who you say is a world-renowned economist?
Economist, yes. Okay. He teaches at John Jay College, or he teaches at a college in New York City. He's been all around the world. I mean, this guy is, he is one of my favorite. I mean, he makes learning about the economy so easy.
All right, well, let's go ahead and give him a listen.
Okay.
All right.
To the All Accommodation Included Weekend Seminar with Dr. Bruce Lipton and myself. This includes entry and all accommodations for two people. Dr. Bruce Lipton is a cellular biologist, and we will discuss what we think we become. So with quantum physics now emphasizing the role of consciousness as the primary force in really creating our world, this program will cover the science of mind over matter and how thoughts, attitudes, beliefs, and perceptions create our physical reality. So for more information and to become a BAI buddy, monthly subscriber, just go to WBAI.org or call 516-620-3602. That's WBAI.org or call 516-620-3602.
This is Phil Donahue, and you're listening to WBAI New York. 99.5.
Welcome, friends, to another edition of Economic Update, a weekly program devoted to the economic dimensions of our lives, our jobs, our incomes, our debts, those of our children, those looming down the road as we know they do. I'm your host, Richard Wolff. I've been a professor of economics all my adult life, and currently I teach at the New School University. We have an exciting program for you today, and I want to jump right into the economic updates and prepare the way for a very important interview that will occupy the second half of the program. I have to begin today by speaking about a strike. Where did it happen? And it's over for the moment, but my guess is it'll be back soon. It was a strike of prisoners in the Alabama prison system. And this needs a word of history, because the ironies and the tragedies here go back a long time. When slavery was finally ended in and by a civil war in the United States, you might have imagined that the condition of slavery was over, but you would have been wrong, because in the 100 years, or almost 100 years afterwards, African Americans from the South particularly found themselves in slave-like conditions, often. And one of the places where they found themselves in slave-like conditions were in the prisons, particularly, again, in the South. And that had something to do with this remarkable 13th Amendment to the United States Constitution. In that amendment, basically, slavery is outlawed. And you might have thought, but again, you'd be wrong, you might have thought that the abolition of slavery is a simple one sentence, and if you abolish it, you abolish it everywhere, always, and hopefully forever. But the 13th Amendment didn't do that. It had a peculiar sentence in there which said, we abolish slavery, it is outlawed, except in prisons. That's in the amendment. A society abandons slavery, outlaws slavery, denounces slavery, fights a horribly destructive civil war over slavery, but can't quite let go, and puts it in prisons. I don't know of any person who ever argued that a person who goes to jail will be better off after he or she finishes their sentence if they were slaves in the institution while they were there. If slavery is bad for the people outside of prison, guess what? It ain't so great inside either. And if you're against it, why in the world would you allow it? And so large numbers of African Americans were incarcerated after the end of slavery, and thereby reinserted into a slave system. Alabama was, in fact, the last state, if I have the history right, back in the 1920s, to end convict labor, making people who were in jail work as slave labor. So the irony is extraordinary that here in the year 2016, in a number of Alabama prisons over the last few weeks, prisoners asserting that they are treated like slave labor and showing pretty good evidence that that's the case, once again, have to make their plight known. It's extraordinary. It's a comment on the American system. it's a comment on the American economy that it has for so long and now recurringly turned to slave labor at a time of difficulty. I want to turn next to another topic that is once again forcing its way up on.
All right, we're going to pause it there, and wow, pleasantly surprised, but you know, I have been seeing more and more of this language being used. But first, let me just say this. Shout out to the new abolitionists out there, because we've been pushing this narrative for the past 5 years. And it's not just simply a narrative, but it's the fact about the exception clause of the 13th Amendment. You know, anybody that can comprehend English should be able to read the 13th Amendment, which is only two, you know, sections, Section 1 and Section 2. And, you know, Section 1 has the exception clause that says that slavery and involuntary servitude shall be abolished except for. So, you know, it's pretty logical to say that there are exceptions that were put in the Constitution whereby a person could legally be put into slavery. So, in fact, the country never abolished slavery. And, you know, when he, you know, he still seems to be stuck in his programming when he uses words like, you know, when slavery ended back then. But then again, he does acknowledge it exists today. But, you know, just that programming that has us keep saying slavery ended 100 years ago or 150 years ago, you know, that's programming, when in fact it has not. And with Alabama saying that it ended its convict leasing program, well, I have to do, we probably already done the research, but if Alabama prisoners are being leased out to corporations like in just about every other state, and their labor is producing goods or providing services, well, that's still convict leasing. It's still convict leasing. You just haven't taken the prisoners off site to build the railroad across America like was done in the beginning with the implementation of the convict leasing program, the new form of slavery, which is well documented in the book and documentary. PBS has it up, Slavery by Another Name. So, you know, I've seen a legal lawyer who works with Asian immigration groups out in California, Angela Chan. She writes for the Huffington Post. She pointed out 13th Amendment. She's been a guest on this program. So we are starting to see more and more of the correct language being used in mainstream media. Now, we wouldn't put public, I don't know, you know, something like NPR, they're totally corporate too. They take money from, you know, white supremacist organizations and what have you. They have white supremacists on there. So, but some of these smaller stations, like we got a public station in Charlotte and what have you, they tend to be closer to the grassroots type of media that we do. You know, but it does just add more, you know, not that we need added credibility, because the facts speak for themselves. But when you have a world-renowned economist and a person with titles and positions and whatnot, when we can get them to acknowledge it publicly and say it, it does, you know, help spread that information to the masses. And I hate to say this, and I'm going to go back to 973, and thank you again for alerting us to that information. I am, you know, elated anytime I hear the correct language being used about slavery. But, you know, we just have to keep pushing. We just have to keep pushing. I lost my train of thought for a second there. But 973, let me go to you. What this is the second time you heard it. Are you still as shocked as the first time?
I am. I'm happy that I learned it from you, from the. I w- if I had listened first time, I probably would have listened to it and said, wow, but the fact that you guys every week go into depth about it, you know, about it more and more, I'm just so happy that it came on the station, because it reaches a lot of people. And Richard Wolf, I'm saying, he gives a lot of credibility to that station, and I'm just happy that, like you said, that it's just being, it's starting to really, really circulate. So I'm very happy. I just want to end with this. As you know, I'm part of the People's Organization for Progress, and we're having a march for Bernie Sanders here in Montclair, New Jersey, tomorrow, 12 o'clock on Maple Avenue in Montclair, New Jersey. We're going to be walking for him, supporting him. Not that I'm only saying that because we don't support Hillary Clinton or whatever, but I just want to say that, like I said, I just couldn't, and you know I don't call here that often, Mr. Reed, but I just could not let you hear that, and like I said, I heard it today, and I'm just glad that I've learned so much from the Black Talk Radio, and I continue to do so. So I really appreciate all the work that you do, you continue to do. I know it's hard, but somebody has to do it. I just want to say power to the people.
All right. Thank you. Thank you. All right. Let me go ahead and clear the call.
Q&A queue is cleared.
So if you have any questions or comments, you can give us a call at 641-715-3660. Participant code 549032 pound. Hit *6 and 1 to come in on air. Of course, the studio line is available. 704-951-5030. And so, you know, when I get news like that, you know, I totally do not have, I can go off script. I don't have to stick to what I say I'm gonna talk about or this and that, because the information is posted on our social media accounts, if not on our own websites and what have you. So, you know, that is the kind of news that I like to hear. I like to hear that the abolitionist message is spreading, and it's always good. You know, everybody, nobody can say that they don't feel good when they see the fruit produced from their labor. And 5 years ago, when I became aware of the 13th Amendment and cognizant that it did not abolish slavery, and then, you know, finding out more information and connecting with other individuals who had the same belief and what have you, and then finding that, hey, it's a whole lot of more people out there who are aware of this than I thought. And it's still a very small community. You know, our Facebook group, Move to Abolish 21st Century Slavery and Human Trafficking, it's only about 2,300 members, but these are people who we hopefully think that they join the group declaring themselves to be abolitionists and what have you. So, but I think that once people are confronted with the information that is being purposely hidden from them by corporate media, once they're confronted with the facts, they have to ponder on those facts, and then, you know, it becomes a situation to where it is no more thinking about when you watching a slave movie on TV or something like that, you know, when these things come up during Black History Month or what have you, or you get in a conversation about what slavery was like. Now your perception is, well, it ain't about what it was like. What it is today is what we need to be looking closely at. Of course, we look at the past to learn from the past, to identify the same tactics that's being used today. And of course, for 150 years, might be 140 years. I think the convict leasing program started 10 years after the conclusion of the Civil War. So 140 years they've been using they passed laws back then known as the Black Codes, target Black people with the law enforcement. All right, send them through a racist criminal justice system that's guaranteed to produce convictions or coerce confessions and what have you, then sentence these people to prison, and in fact send them right back into slavery. and use their labor. The United States, literally, when people say that it was literally built on the back of enslaved people, I mean, the evidence is there. You know, the narrative that they like to push, and I don't want to diminish the contributions of Chinese immigrants who worked on the railroad, but the vast majority of the labor was enslaved labor from the prisons. People put in the prison for vagrancy, unemployment, and you know, just look up the black codes and what have you. Well, those things, we got the black codes today, you know, but it's more codified or more refined to where they don't put the language in there where, you know, they're saying, you know, using racial classifications, who we gonna target this at, you know, passing, you know, like no niggas allowed or no Negroes allowed, you know, those were laws that were on the books. Now they take those out, they just take the words out, but they continue the mistreatment and what have you in other ways and other forms. And so all of that is still going on today. You know, it's just the mass media, as we heard on that WBAI segment, when it first come on, the lady was announcing, I guess, another topic of another program, when she was talking about how things create, like, you know, media, you know, information, and it doesn't mean it's correct information and what have you, but it creates your physical reality. And so for 150 years since the conclusion of the Civil War, the reality that has been painted for billions and billions of people, because indeed all of the rest of the nations on the planet believe this lie, that the United States abolished slavery at the conclusion of the Civil War, when what really happened and has been documented and I've reported before was that the Union did not win the war. There was a succession of hostilities. Lincoln pretty much gave them what they wanted and showed them how to practice it in a codified form. Not just Lincoln by himself, but the so-called Northern politicians and whatnot. Too many white folks was dying. We got to bring a stop to all these white folks dying and what have you. And so we're going to allow you, if you come back into the Union, we're going to allow you to continue to practice slavery, but only under the guise of criminal justice or crime and punishment. It's what's going on today. There's no denying it whatsoever. And a lot of people's reality is that, you know, slavery was abolished and it's no longer a problem, when it is most certainly a problem. And so I just really don't see how people can be confronted with that and, you know, be apathetic towards these issues. Do something. I don't care if it's a march, make phone calls, what have you, whatever. You know, spread the information, give speeches to groups and informing them and what have you. Coalition building around the issue, bringing organizations into a coalition to remove the 13th Amendment, which we reported this week on New Abolitionist Radio. Colorado's legislators just passed an amendment to the state constitution to remove the exception clause from the Colorado Constitution. That took activists, boots on the ground, coalition building, phone calls, emails, all of that, education workshops around that issue. And so, you know, we are starting to see what could be, you know, the beginning of a mass awakening on the issue of slavery. So, you know, I'm certainly happy, you know, to hear different people, especially people who have these titles, who are showcased, as Mr. Fuller would say, to the media and have access to platforms where they could reach it. That's in New York City. So what, New York City got 2 million population, probably closer to 2 million or more than 2 million, because Charlotte, North Carolina, is about to hit 1 million. You know, so that's potentially 3 million people who might have tuned in to that program. We'll just say a third. So a million people might have tuned in to that station and heard that information about slavery has not been abolished. These brothers are fighting against it. I don't know why I'm not hearing any news about the sisters rebelling on the prison plantations. Perhaps they are and the news is being suppressed. But now, you know, at least, you know, possibly a million people in New York know that there are ongoing slave rebellions that have been actually been going on for the past, well, I can just comment on the past 5 years since I've been paying attention. And in fact, the Free Alabama movement, some of the brothers that are mentioned in some of the media pieces that I've read have called into this program, have called into New Abolitionist Radio, have been guests. So what? Yeah, they ain't supposed to have cell phones. Guards probably smuggled it in and sold it and whatnot. But, you know, we're talking about the greater crime of slavery. So we've heard directly from some of these people that's participating in the Free Alabama movement, which is spreading to different prisons. Again, it's also occurring in Texas. But again, you know, harking back to yesterday's program on the power of the media to control the minds of the masses, that is a quote from Malcolm X, who we, you know, acknowledged his birthday yesterday and his influence on in the founding of the Black Talk Media Project. But, you know, this is just evidence. This is just more evidence that we need to utilize this tool as a weapon. You know, so that's the only way, you know, only we can tell our own story. So I just hope people continue to support our crowdfunding black media efforts. Again, for those who give $25 contribution or more, you'll get the Black Radio Stations Matter t-shirts. And I know some people might want to play games and play semantics and say, oh, black radio stations don't matter because, you know, why are all these black people so misinformed if they mattered and whatnot? Those are not really black radio stations and what have you. And the independent stations I am aware of, you know, they're being starved of resources. They had to compete against corporations like Clear Channel and Radio One, and they're kind of shut out the market. But indeed, we have opportunity with digital radio now, with that being spread, and they're spreading internet access, broadband access, and what have you, giving it away free around the world in some places. We had to utilize these tools in order to reach the masses. We may have reached a million people thus far as we, you know, are in the fifth month of this year. I know we've reached over a couple of million through our social media operations. Factor in, you know, the YouTube channel, Twitter, all of that, you know, pushing our stories, pushing the truth and what have you. But in terms of this radio station, we probably have reached a million thus far, which would be like the size of the city of Charlotte. But we could reach so many more. We could reach so many more, but it's going to take organization. It's going to take organization. It's going to take funding. So thank you, 973, for calling in and sharing that information. Let me see. Let me go ahead and take a station identification break. I do want to touch upon this, especially this COINTELPRO story. Before I go off air, I also need to check on some things, find out what is the live programming schedule for tonight, as we do have several programs that broadcast on Fridays, Friday evenings particularly. So, yeah, let's go ahead and take a break, and we'll come back. And we'll hit upon this story where the FBI is claiming that it has lost files related to Ed Poindexter's case. Mondo Wielenga's dead already. Just died in the past couple of weeks. You know, I shouldn't say died, but was killed. Killed by the prison plantation. His illness came from the inhumane conditions he suffered. while in there. But the FBI is now claiming that it can't find information related to their case, which would further show more evidence, direct evidence, instead of just a whole lot of circumstantial evidence, but direct evidence that the Nebraska field office of the FBI set up the Omaha 2. Ed Poindexter and Mondo Wielenga, formerly known as David Rice, for the assassination of a police officer who was killed when he went to a house on a 911 call, and when he got there, got to the door, I think there was a suitcase, and it blew up and killed him. And they framed Ed Poindexter for it, used a little black teenager, slapped him around during court proceedings. I mean, it's on video on the YouTube. Got him to change his story and implicant. I mean, he testified on the stand that they did not tell him to make any phone calls, to make the 911 call to lure this cop out to this address, and then they blew it up, and you know, he didn't see them with any bomb making materials, and then they had a recess, prosecution call, asked for a recess, got a recess. Dwayne Peek is the young man's name. He didn't change his name now. He's still alive, hiding somewhere, but he was only 15 years old at the time. They take him out during recess, the police, that is, allegedly under police escort, beat him so badly that they had to put sunglasses on him, but you could still tell, you know, from the side and whatnot, that he had puffy eyes and been beat up. He was crying, and now he comes back, and now all of a sudden he's saying everything the prosecution wants them to say. And these are political prisoners, you know, just two. Well, now one, if we're talking about the Omaha two, again, Mondo Wielenga, who is with the ancestors now, maintain his innocence all the way to the end, all the way to his transition. But Ed Poindexter is still in there, and he's just one of many political prisoners. Actually, the caller brought up Bernie Sanders. There's an article that came out. Bernie Sanders is calling for the release of Puerto Rican nationalist and revolutionary, I think it is Oscar Rivera Lopez, or did he call for the release? Yeah, Oscar Rivera Lopez, who fought for Puerto Rican independence, and acknowledging that Puerto Rico is in fact a colony, been colonized by the white supremacists of the United States. Of course, Bernie Sanders didn't use that language, but I seen an article come out. We shared it on Political Prisoner Radio's Facebook page about him calling for the release. So that would make him much more, much more receptive to calls for the release of other political prisoners. See, that's why Hillary Clinton and the mainstream media try to attack him on questions about Castro and the Cuban Revolution and the things he was saying about, you know, the education, the health care of Cuba after the revolution. He was saying these things 10, 15, 20 years ago, and they tried to burn him with that. So, of course, Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump will not be open to having any kind of truth and reconciliation commission based on all of this evidence of the illegal COINTELPRO white supremacist terrorist plot to kill, assassinate, murder, whatever you want to call black leaders, grassroots leaders, national leaders, international leaders, and what have you. So, man, I mean, this is the news that you're not going to hear about from Steve Harvey. Not going to hear about it from Tom Joyner. You're going to hear some jokes, and some of them might even be funny. You're going to hear about some celebrities or whatnot. I mean, I don't know. Y'all tell me, because it's probably been about 10 years since. Well, actually, the other day I was up early in the morning, went to the store. Tom Joyner morning show was on, and I heard jokes about free college, Bernie Sanders calling for free college and what have you, and just, you know, clowning on that issue. But then, and so you expect these people to also be on your side when you demand reparations. They sitting up there talking about free college is undoable. Health care, universal health care is undoable. So what makes you think Tom Joyner and all these other people is going to all of a sudden turn around and say reparations is doable? Anyway, I tend to run on. Sometimes I don't mean to. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed, broadcasting from behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. I'll be right back.
No, I'm not a writer.
Okay.
Black Talk Radio, since 2008, providing new black media for the masses. And welcome back. Again, you're tuned in to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed. The telephone number to get in with your question, comment, news, observations is 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549-032 pound. Hit star 6 and 1 to come in on air. Signal the host. And the studio line is 704-951-5030. So, getting back to this news from Mr. Michael Richardson. This story is posted for you on Black Talk Radio Network's Facebook page. I subscribe to Mr. Richardson's feed on The Examiner. Again, I've talked to him on the phone. It's hard to interview him because where he's living, I probably shouldn't even discuss, but let's just say he don't always have access to electricity. He's hiding out as he exposed the terrorist tactics that occurred under, several administrations of the United States government. So, Mr. Richardson published this article on today, about 8 o'clock this morning. It is titled, again, it is published on the main Examiner site, examiner.com, Missing Omaha FBI Files Had Counterintelligence Secrets About Omaha 2 is the title of Mr. Richardson's article. Again, he does a great job, has done a great job in documenting and following and reporting on the case of the Omaha 2. I'm just sharing some from his article. The admission by the Federal Bureau of Investigation that 7 years, okay, we ain't talking about seven different pieces of paper. We ain't talking about seven folders. We ain't talking about, we're talking about 7 years of annual field office inspection reports are missing, suggesting some of the lost documents exonerated the Omaha 2, Edward Poindexter, and WAPA Shiite Mondo E. Wielenga, formerly David Rice. A recent document search by David Hardy, section chief of the Records Management Division, revealed the disappearance. We are unable to locate records, said Hardy. I wonder if those, I wonder if they was keeping those records on a secret basement server. I don't know. I'm just taking a stab at it as to how those records are missing. Mr. Richardson goes on to write, the missing FBI reports span the 10 years of Paul Young and Fletcher Thompson as special agents in charge of the Omaha field office, 1967 to 1973. Both Young and Thompson proposed counterintelligence actions against black nationalists in Omaha under the illegal counterintelligence program codenamed COINTELPRO. Young targeted Poindexter and Mondo of the National Committee to Combat Fascism, and Thomas also targeted Charles Knox of the Black Revolutionary Party. The Omaha Two were convicted in April of 1971 for the murder of an Omaha policeman and sentenced to life at the maximum security Nebraska State Penitentiary. Poindexter remains in prison and denies guilt in the crime. Mondo died at the prison in March. I was thinking weeks ago. It's been months. All right, maybe I'm still feeling his presence. As head of the NCCF, a Black Panther affiliate group, Poindexter had been the victim of two reported COINTELPRO dirty tricks before he was marked for a murder conviction by Paul Young. Control over illegal counterintelligence actions during clandestine operations was maintained by the cross-dressing, and you know he didn't write that, but I just inserted that, by J. Edgar Hoover, who used the inspection division to monitor and execute the misdeeds. George Moore, check this out, head of the racial intelligence section, wrote in January 1971 in an annual inspection report of the FBI's domestic intelligence division about the extent of involvement of the inspectors in COINTELPRO operations. And so you could just read more of that. He does a great job in documenting the information and what have you. Provides external links to this, but I've been following him for a number of years now as I've tried to inform myself better about the plight of political prisoners and prisoners of war in this country. So now they're claiming they can't find these files. And back then, we're talking about the days of, you know, paper trails where everything was, you know, done by typewriter. These reports were filed, handwritten, notes, all of that. 7 years, not seven files lost, 7 years worth of records are missing. 7 years worth of missing. And then, you know, I've heard people argue and say since they were convicted under state crimes, you know, you have to also factor in that the FBI was working hand in hand with these cops, and that's why I don't buy into this cop worship stuff and all this and that. You know, people are people. I try not to think that we are defined by what we do. You know, in terms of if I'm a fry cook or something, you know, in a restaurant or something, which I've actually worked at as a teenager, done that job, worked as a cook and a chef. I'm not defined by what I do. I'm not defined by that. If I play basketball, I'm a professional athlete. By what I do, I'm simply not defined. But when we talk about stuff, excuse me. When we're talking about slave catchers, we're talking about plantation guards, when we're talking about overseers, when we're talking about investors in modern day slavery and what have you, because they've always had their investors and whatnot. A lot of Europe got its wealth from investing in slavery, slave bonds, what they might have been called back in the day, surety bonds in the banks, you know, the insurance companies writing up these policies. People in Europe were able to invest in slavery, you know, in back during the let's just call it pre-1865 slavery days. Now we're in post-1865 slavery days. So that's still going on today. That's still going on today. So when I hate to say, but I tend to define people by that profession. They have to totally be brainwashed. I do need to take into consideration that they've been subjected to mass programming, programming that has been worked on and perfected and experimentation on the masses and whatnot. They've been doing this for decades, if not hundreds of years, going back to the printing press or whatnot, you know. So, you know, certain people are susceptible to that, especially when the entire society is built on a lie. You know, when people talk about the history of the United States, I understand some Donald Trump people and racist suspects out there got angry because this black woman had on a hat that said, "When was America ever great?" You know, and they're directing their racist vitriol towards her. See, there, you know, the majority of people are bought into that mass programming that America was great or is great, or the greatest nation, and they could just turn the blind eye. They've been programmed to just simply dismiss the slavery part. You know, George Washington on a dollar bill or what, let's just ignore it. Let's give him a place of honor, even though he enslaved Africans, hundreds of them. He derived his wealth from that. He even engaged in human trafficking, worked to subvert the laws of Philadelphia when the president's house was in Philadelphia, took his enslaved victims out of Philadelphia before the 6-month time limit was up where they would have been declared free. This man was doing that kind of stuff. And I just read an article this week about he might have fathered enslaved victim with a enslaved African woman who went by the name of Venus, who was called Venus. We're talking about rapists, we're talking about adulterers and things of that nature, and yet, you know, millions of dollars, well, of course, that's part of the programming, but millions of people believe this lie. Say, oh, that was back then. Well, you know, what difference do the time period make? Evil is evil. You should be able to identify evil if you have any light within you. If there's any good within you whatsoever, if you have what they call a so-called conscience and whatnot, and you strive to treat people the way you would want to be treated and treat everybody quote-unquote fairly, as they say, how can you overlook this history and give places of honor to people like that? I mean, that goes back to the flag story, you know. Now these Confederate flags are going to be banned. I mean, it's just incorrect to honor people that were so freaking stupid or brainwashed or evil, all of the above, that the majority of Confederate soldiers did not even own any slaves. They were poor, landless crackers, uneducated crackers. They might have had a job or two as plantation overseers and, you know, other odd jobs and whatnot. Of course, they was hired by the original police, the slave catchers and what have you. But the majority of them did not earn any, they did not get rich off of enslaving Africans. They did derive some benefits. They were able to, you know, provide food and clothing and shelter for their family by participating in that. And that's still going on to this day. And it's not limited to white folk either. So these tactics today, the demonization of Black Lives Matter, and even black people participating in that, casting suspicion on them without fully investigating things and then not even realizing that that's just a label. That's just a name that has been the latest name given to a movement that is really, you know, just different organizations that are probably have issues they work on that kind of overlap and whatnot, and they just decided that, hey, we're gonna have combine our membership numbers, bring our numbers up and what have you, and go do this demonstration or bring power, you know, to bear on exposing that situation, on getting prosecutors like Anita Alvarez voted out of office in Chicago, getting the dude in Cleveland, I forget his name, is it Ginty, the prosecutor who failed to indict Timothy Loman for the murder of Tamir Rice and what have you. Black Lives Matter played a role into that, but I've seen derogatory pieces about, oh, Black Lives Matter hasn't equated into many votes turning out, but they did not start as a get-out-the-vote operation, like P. Diddy's being funded by the government, or the Rock the Vote campaign being funded by the government, to have all these mainstream rappers and celebrities telling you to get out the vote. Not that that's a bad thing, but, you know, Black Lives Matter did not start as no get out the vote effort. And all of them do not even participate in politics, but they allow people to engage in whatever activity they think is constructive, that they you know, might be able to have some success in. It's unity without conformity. They're being demonized today to become the political prisoners. In fact, many of them have been arrested, face charges. What have you? New political prisoners are being created all the time. I would hate to hear about one of these young people 40 years from now, and we, you know, if I'm still here reporting about the FBI setting them up. As we know, the FBI has been surveilling them. Same tactics, COINTELPRO. So history just keeps repeating itself. It's, do you study that history to identify the tactics that are being used against you, what is working against you, and how you can counter that, and what has worked for us, and how we can improve upon it. You got to study history, man. Ain't nothing new under the sun. Nothing new under the sun. It's just repackaged, reformatted, different speaker. Nothing new. So, anyway, got to keep up the fight. My particular area I choose to really focus in on is media. And they really need the media. They really need the media. Just like the story, you know, that was a big deal. WBAI, you know, doing a story on the slave rebellion in Alabama. Because you ain't heard that on MSNBC. You ain't heard it on CBS. Joy Reid ain't even mentioned it on her Twitter. Y'all know who Joy Reid is, the black female who they've regulated to. She used to have a show. Now she can come on for 2 minutes on somebody else's show, a white person's show, and say whatever, and then she gone. Yeah, she ain't even reporting on it. Glenn Ifill ain't reporting on it at PBS. None of these people are reporting on these continued slave rebellions that have occurred over the past couple of years. So media is very important. It is a tool of warfare, and the only way we're going to be able to compete with these six mega corporations that control 95% of what we see, read, listen to, whatever, man, it's going to take a unified front on this level. And again, we don't have to agree on everything. Unity without conformity. But what we most definitely should agree upon is establishing independent networks all over this nation. In fact, all over the globe. Internet's global. All right, I'm going to take a station identification and get ready to wrap up the program and just check and see what the live programming will look like for tonight on Black Talk Radio Network. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News, part of the Black Talk Radio Network, providing you with new black media for the millennium. Stay tuned. I'll be back on the other side.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
And you are tuned in to Black Talk Radio News. Scotty Reed broadcasting from behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. So the last story that I want to touch upon, last but not least, is this story about this 12-year-old who apparently appears to be a survivor of a schoolyard lynching, is what it sounds like. This article comes to you from BreakingBrown.com. BreakingBrown.com. com. The title of the article, I'm waiting for it to load up. Black girl at mostly white private school arrives home with severe rope burn around neck. And it provides an image, and you know, it actually looks like somebody cut her neck with a box cutter or something, you know, tried to slash her or something. So they she must have been up there a long time, or of course your body is going to struggle when oxygen is being cut off, and as you feel the rope tighten around your neck, your body involuntarily is going to struggle to survive and what have you. But the article reports that authorities in Texas are investigating how a 12-year-old black girl who attends a mostly white private school ended up with severe rope burns around her neck after a school camping trip. The girl's family says she has been bullied for months, and this incident was a racially motivated assault. So why haven't you pulled your child out to homeschooling then, if this has been going on for months? Don't matter the name of the school. It's a private school, and I work hard and been slaving for corporate America all these years so I could send my child to a good school. If the damn school is not a safe environment, what sense do that make? See, sometimes we allow our children to be victimized and what have you. Pull your child out. If you see these people are not taking terrorism serious. We've seen too many stories like this across the country, and I don't mean to be coming down on the victims, the parents, and what have you, but, you know, sometimes we just have to slap people with the truth. We know all of these bad things are occurring in this school system, yet we continue to send our children to be brainwashed, like Malcolm X said. And I know it sounds harsh, but forgive him for being blunt, but only a fool will allow his children to be educated by his enemy. But we got a certain class of black folks in this country that think that these people are our friends. And when I say these people, I'm talking about the racists, the admitted racists, as well as those who are more codified and pretend like they're not racist while practicing racism, Tim Wise. It looked like somebody had ripped her neck apart and stitched it back together, the girl's mother, Sandy Rogley, told the Dallas Morning News. Live Oak Classical School, however, claims in a statement that the girl was injured accidentally while the students were playing with a rope attached to a tree. Wonder what type of game they was playing. Let me just think, you know. Damn, I wonder if they seen all those photographs of white people attending lynchings and other barbaric acts of terrorism and mutilating black bodies, you know, because it does get shared on Facebook by black people. Share that on Facebook, and they was like, let's play this game, let's recreate this historic event, and since you're, you know, black, obviously you get to play, you know, the terrorist victim and what happened. Like, that girl went along with it. Is that what we I don't know. Did they talk her into that? She's only 12. Did they forcefully do this? I don't know. But let me tell you, let's not think of these little, we would assume that these are other 12-year-olds, 13-year-olds and whatnot. Let's not assume their innocence, because let me tell you, when I was 9 years old, I was chased by a baseball team full of 11 and 12 year olds led by their coaches. Me and my cousins were chased, where they were going to beat us with baseball bats and probably kick us in the head with the cleats and kill us. That happened to me in Detroit as 11 year old. These little kids have been trained to be terrorists. This is training. This is home training. This is also something society promotes. You know, when you have monuments to Confederate soldiers who everybody acknowledges was fighting to keep people enslaved, and, you know, except for the extreme idiots that want to say it's all about states' rights. Yeah, states' rights to practice slavery, but, you know, School administrators have also accused the girl's family of trying to exploit the incident for financial gain. They alleged that the family's attorney, good to hear that, Levi McCatherine, attempted to blackmail officials by demanding a $2.7 million payout to prevent the story from going public. Sound like he was trying to get justice for his child now. I mean, for his client, but I don't agree with covering it up. We need these things to be public, but of course that's the school, what the school's saying. Let's not assume they're telling the truth about anything, but the evidence shows this girl has a rope burn around her neck, a very deep rope burn. The school has acknowledged it happened on their watch, so they're responsible. Playing with a rope and a tree. How the hell do you play with a rope in a tree? I ain't never played that game as a child. Not with quote unquote friends. None of my friends tried to, you know, say, Scotty, let's play this game. We're gonna play robbers, cowboys and bank robbers or something like that, and you the bank robber and I captured you and you killed all these people and you robbed these stage coaches and we gonna pretend like we gonna hang you and whatnot. Let's put this rope around your neck and, you know, go over to this tree and you pretend like you on a horse and we slap the horse. And I ain't never heard nobody playing that game except for racist white terrorists. You know, that's what the history show. So anyway, we live behind enemy lines. We need to recognize that. And again, if that had been going on for months, there was no way I was going to keep sending my child into a hostile environment with that, without impressing upon these people. If anything happened to my child, I cannot be held responsible for what happens when I go temporarily insane because y'all murdered my child and I told you about it. So, you know, I guess I'll be seeing the prosecutor at trial. She ain't put the fear into them like that. I don't know. Again, I can't speculate on what the parents said or what they didn't say, but I just can't imagine it keep sending my child into an environment where they're going to be terrorized on a daily basis. I went to a predominantly white middle school and high school. We didn't tolerate that terrorism. Didn't tolerate it. We used violence to let them know and set the tone that you will not be terrorizing us here in school. We are not afraid of you. You're not going to bully us. You're not going to call us niggers. You're not going to do all any of that. Because if you do, you're going to get punched in the mouth, bust in the head, cut, stay up, whatever. Can't be nice with terrorists, man. I mean, how is that logical? So you have to always set the standard of what you would tolerate. And, you know, I'm thinking of a quote of what's his name? Frederick Douglass said, the limits of tyrants are prescribed by what the masses tolerate. We as black people tolerate way too damn much. Anyway, that's all I got to say about this. Stay tuned. I believe Tando Radio Show will be on air. Let me just do a quick check of my Gmail. Again, want to remind you, we do have the extra, extra large shirts. We've had people wanting to get their appreciation gift of the Black Radio Stations Matter t-shirt with a $25 contribution, and we didn't have any extra, extra larges. Got some now. So if you want to order those, we got sizes from medium, large, extra large, and extra, extra large. And for those that have gotten those shirts, we certainly would appreciate seeing photos of you on social media, spreading the message that black radio stations matter. And we're just speaking those things to be as though they were. That's a spiritual principle for those that want to say black radio stations don't matter, cause Clear Channel own the majority of the station. Then that makes us matter anymore, even more, or should matter even more. So we got those extra large shirts in, working on some more appreciation gifts for those who do the $25 a month. I'm actually about to republish the audio, internet radio audio mixing kit that I published, copyrighted, and published about a year ago. Because I've built upon those techniques, simplified it, streamlined it, produces better quality and whatnot. And I have found another provider for the audio cards that come with the kit. Got a reasonable price, so I can keep the price low for those who've gotten those kits and who may want them in the future. So we can also get those out, you know, as appreciation gifts for contributions to the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit. Black Talk Radio, that is the Lotus Place. I'm sorry. The Lotus Place radio program should be on air tonight, Friday night. Just checking, but I have not heard from Tando Radio Show. But that doesn't mean he won't be on air. So, you know, if he is going to do his show, he's going to be on air. If something has come up, then he won't be on air, and there will be pre-recorded content available for your listening edification. All right, so come to the conclusion of the program. I will be back on air next Monday. Hope that you all make it through the weekend without getting hemmed up by any of these slave catchers, become one of their victims and what have you. Hope that you are taking precautions and sharpening your skills on how you move behind enemy lines. We need to get ninja-like. I'm serious, man. We got, by any means necessary, spiritually, psychologically, physically, we have to resist slavery. We have to. And a part of resisting slavery is not becoming a casualty that then puts further strain on the community. So take all necessary precautions. Be safe out there. No drinking and driving. No drugging and driving. Don't make it easy for them. Use your turn signals. Don't, you know, go over the speed limit, doing 25 over the speed limit with no seatbelt on the interstate. That's all the stuff that make you easy casualties, and it creates a strain on you, on your family, because now they got to bail you out of jail and whatnot and scrape up the resources and what have you to get you out of jail, money they don't have. Then it puts a strain on the community, because when they kill you, you know, up in that jail, then you know we got to come out for you and all of that. We're going to grieve for you and whatnot. So, you know, we know casualties are unavoidable, but don't make it easy. That puts a strain on us. So be careful out there over the weekend, and tune back in. Stay tuned in to Black Talk Radio's digital radio station, providing you with new black media for the new millennium, 24/7. But more importantly, share the station with a friend. Help spread the message of independent black media. Peace and blessings to all.